I can feel it. I can feel it happening.
This is The Bi-Coastal Actor, a podcast about being an actor in Atlanta or Los Angeles. I am Jeff Holbrook, and with me this week and every week is Ben Austin. I'm in Atlanta, and Ben is in L.A. This episode and every episode is brought to you by Polar Studios, and you can find more shows just like this one over at polarpodcasts.com. Benjamin!
Jeffrey!
How are you?
Good. How are you, brother?
Good. You know what? I'm doing pretty freaking great right now. I'm pretty happy with life, and things are good.
Yeah.
By way of introduction, I think we should sort of mention how this whole show came to be. The idea, as I remember it, was you called me one day because you were doing a workshop, and in this workshop, part of the deal was you were checking in with somebody kind of every week, right?
Yes, that's exactly right. Sorry, the workshop, I'm just going to promote a little bit, because it was a really fantastic workshop, and I really got a lot out of it. So Dallas Travers is the name of the woman who leads the workshop, and her self-stated goal is to change the way this industry, the entertainment industry, works. To give entertainers a little bit more power over their own careers, which I think is fantastic because I am one, and power over my own career sounds very appealing. So part of this workshop, and really one of the parts I was most reluctant to take part in, was having an accountability buddy, someone that you checked in with. And said, this is what I'm doing. These are the goals that I have, and this is what I've done today to get me closer to those goals. And it takes, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, however long it takes, the goal being to keep it kind of brief. But that it was really daily, in some cases, check-in to say, this is what I'm doing, and weekly in some cases, and monthly in some cases. You can have multiple people to check in with if you want. And I found it to be this incredible tool, not just because it kept me focused on goals, but also because it got me reconnected with you, one of my good friends, one of my best friends, who, since moving out here, I've lost a little touch with, just because we're both busy trying to make this thing happen. And I don't think there's any bitterness or anything, but...
Oh, there's bitterness.
You just lose track with people.
Oh, there's bitterness.
Oh, well, there's no bitter...
Oh, there's bitterness.
I wasn't bitter. You're a bitter, bitter man, though, so I expect a little bitterness on your part.
It's the coffee. It's all the coffee.
You gotta stop mainlining it.
That's right. It's like black tar heroin, but in coffee form.
Your blood is no longer red, Jeffrey.
That's true. So we've been talking every week for like over 8 weeks or so, and I was really interested in the things that were coming up and just how our experiences could be similar sometimes just because we're both actors, and how our experiences can be different sometimes because we're actors in very different markets. And that's what made me think about this show in particular is, neither one of us individually could be called a bi-coastal actor, right?
Right.
But I think the listener, whoever you are who's listening to this right now, I would say if you're looking at should I be in Los Angeles, should I be in Atlanta, then my thesis would be perhaps you are the bi-coastal actor.
With our powers combined, you will be a mechanized Voltron-esque actor.
I like that.
Okay, good.
Killing all you oppose.
Robot cats.
The butt cats?
How about we outperform them? Let's not kill them just yet. It's a little much, buddy.
Did you just say the butt cats?
No. Robot. Robot.
Oh.
Not the butt cats.
I heard the butt cats.
That would be a catastrophe.
I see a Voltron made entirely of cats who are all facing the wrong way. But we digress.
It makes herding cats even more difficult.
That's right. That's right. So our markets are very different.
Yeah, Zach. Yeah, I've learned that since moving out here. Wide gaps. Just a big gap in my knowledge moving out here, what I was used to in Atlanta.
Right.
But sorry, you had a riff you were about to
explore. Well, I was just going to say, speaking of big gaps in knowledge, we don't have all the answers individually. But I think that by me asking whatever questions I would want to ask about what is it like to live in L.A., that might help someone who's on the fence try to figure out where they want to go. And I know there are a lot of L.A. folks who are coming over here right now, and they might want to know what the market is like over here, and I could be able to answer some of those questions. So I think that's a general, you know, purpose of the show, if you will. But, you know, I want to know, Ben, you used to be here. You used to be in Atlanta. So why are you in L.A., and how is that working out so far?
It's working out really well, actually. And the reason I'm here is I felt that Atlanta, while it is a booming market, and the surrounding areas, actually, the Southeast and the South in the United States right now, really thriving places to be an actor who's getting started, but not so much for me. Now, I look more like the leading man type, and this is an industry where you're very often cast based on your appearance, almost first impression. And it's very important, actually. I used to get upset about that, and now I realize, well, no, that's more than just what I look like. That's an essence I have, something that people see and experience when they first encounter me. So it's really important. In Atlanta, I experienced casting directors liked me. I would book some commercial gigs, And I'd go for auditions and callbacks, and I knew that I was doing my job well, and I knew that people liked me, but I was not booking theatrically. I wasn't booking to say theatrically TV and film. I booked one gig, and honestly, that one gig, I feel that I booked it on my abilities, but then once I was on set, standing next to one of the leads, I feel that because of my look, I was then put into a background position. And I understand that now. I didn't at the time. At the time, I was pretty upset about it. Now I get why that is. So my theory was that if the lead roles were getting cast out of LA and New York and some other places, but not necessarily getting cast out of Atlanta, well, I should go where those parts are getting cast, because I don't necessarily fit the role of the sidekick. I don't necessarily fit the role of the quirky computer geek or anything like that, regardless of my own geek status. So that's what brought me out here. And I would say it's been successful. It's a much larger market, I will say that.
So let's circle back to what you were just talking about with Now I Understand It. You're talking about, and obviously we won't name the project, but at the time you were very angry because you were upset. There was a malaise,
yes,
about being placed in the back and kind of out of sight line from the star and stuff like that, and kind of out of his shot.
I went from a two shot with a lead, the lead.
Right.
Him, the two of us, and to being sort of in the background with a few other, with another person, and with him in the foreground, it was, you couldn't recognize me at all, and I was definitely upset about that. I was looking forward to being able to add that footage to my reel, and that kind of credit to my resume would have been fantastic.
Mm-hmm. But now you say you understand it, and what is it about being in LA that makes you understand that now? Was it the move to LA? Was it something you learned while you're there, or was it just time?
It's being in this market and seeing the people that I'm going up against in auditions, and understanding that it's more than just the talent of the actor that they're looking at. It's more than just your skill that they're looking at when they're casting you. There are many, many reasons that a particular actor is cast in a particular role at a particular time. And I hope that we talk about all of those reasons that we're aware of as this podcast goes on, because I think that's, it will help a lot of actors, I believe, start to understand, you know, it's not a personal thing. It's not something I should get upset about. It's something I should understand that I can use. That knowledge is useful to me now, as opposed to something that upsets me.
Right, right. And a minute ago, you were talking about, you know, that you say you don't book the nerdy IT guys or the quirky sidekick characters, which is funny because that is my primary line of business.
Right.
And it doesn't upset me. I think it maybe used to upset me a little bit when I would think about things like my weight or whatever. But one day I was talking to my agent, and she meant this as a compliment, and I took it as one, but it sounds kind of funny offhand. I was like, you know, can I lose some weight? Is that okay? Do you care if I lose some weight? And do you think I'm not going to book because of that? And she looks at my face and she goes, oh, honey, you can lose weight, but you know, this face isn't going to change, so you'll be fine. And she's right.
For those of you at home that can't see, we're FaceTiming this podcast, and Jeff just patted his gorgeous cheek when he said that. This face, this punim, right
punim
here, that's not going to change. That precious little, I want to pinch.
This punim. But I'm a character actor, and I like being a character actor. You know, I enjoy the things that I get to do in that. And for me, it's just been understanding what business I'm in, right? This is the thing that I sell. I hear a lot of people kind of get fussy about, well, geez, I don't want to play the game, or I don't want to get pigeonholed into a certain thing. And my thought is, you know, this is the foot in the door. This is the thing that if you get known for doing a certain line of thing, you know, that means you get known by the casting directors, you get cast more, you get to work more, and that old phrase, work gets work. Eventually, if you are strong enough and if you're good enough and if you, you know, really are as good as you think you are, then you will get that opportunity to play something that is outside of what you might be expected to play. And you just got to take the long game about it, I think.
It's really important, I think, to look at successful actors' careers, the many successful actors that we all know. Look at Jack Nicholson. Look at his career. When you think of Jack Nicholson, everyone's got a pretty specific role or image or essence, this idea, when they think of Jack Nicholson. Now think about the film about Schmidt. And this is not an original idea of mine. This is something another person was talking to me about. But About Schmidt is sort of a movie where you're waiting for Jack Nicholson to go wild, to go crazy, to jack out on us, you know, to like do that thing that he does. But he never does it. And I personally like that movie. But how long did it take in Jack Nicholson's career for him to be able to comfortably say, well, I'm going to do this now. I'm known for being Jack Nicholson. Here's Johnny, all that sort of stuff. How long did it take before he could comfortably say, you know, I'm going to do something you don't expect?
Right, right. And so now we're sort of talking about what it is to kind of break into the next level. But let's back up a little bit and get to kind of what our show topic is now, since we're, you know, about 15 minutes in or so. We're here to talk about pilot season and pilots and getting started. And I think that's a great topic for a show. So what, Jack Nicholson started in what? Was it Little Shop of Horrors? Wasn't he just like a background player or whatever?
Jack Nicholson, to my knowledge, was actually a contracted player, and he did background or bit parts or little parts in the studio system. He came in at the very end of the golden era of the studio system. And he was doing that kind of stuff, from what I understand, until Easy Rider. You know, that was what got him some serious recognition for being who he is. He was in a movie version of Little Shop of Horrors. I have not seen it. I don't know who he played. I think it was...
It's a bit part, but those old Corman things are really something. But, I mean, he had to start from somewhere, and
he paid his dues the way that everyone talks about paying their dues.
Right. I certainly hear a lot of people even just in Atlanta, talking about wanting to break in or get their foot in or that kind of stuff. And I imagine you must see a lot of that over there as well. I don't know when anyone feels like they're in, so to speak. And I don't really know if that feeling ever comes. And I think it's the wrong thing to chase. You know, oh, suddenly I'm in, I'm accepted, all my problems are gone, and I'm going to book everything I want forever.
I'm sure that some actors have that. Brad Pitt comes to mind, you know? Tom Cruise. Actors who really get to pick their own parts. Actors who are at that level of success that they actually get to choose whether or not they want to work. But I don't think the majority of us, I think the 90% of us, we are constantly in that state of, you know, well, what's next? What's the next thing? What am I going to do next to up my game? What am I going to do next to distinguish myself? Where's that next project coming from? Most of the actors that the ones that I think of as very successful actors that I've gotten a chance to speak to personally, they've said the same thing. What's the advice that you would give to a young actor? They all say, don't get too discouraged, but keep looking for that next job and keep praying that it's going to come. That's my biggest concern. Where's the next job coming from?
That's good. That means you're on the hunt. That means you're looking for it. I think to a degree, if you flip that on its head, it could be detrimental and it could be really negative. I am sort of the opinion of, why not feel like you're already always in control, and why not already feel like I get to choose when I work next? You know, I mean, I know the reality is the jobs kind of come when they come, but you never have to go to that audition. Do you know what I mean? And yes, you're going to want to, right? But there's sometimes where I think it's important to feel like you have some control in an uncontrollable industry. Maybe that's because I have control issues, but knowing that at any point in time, none of those people across the table from you in the system have any power over you, and you can just walk away. But you are in that audition room because you choose to be there, and you're standing on your own 2 feet, and yes, you want the job, but if you don't get it, hey, I've got something else to do. I have a life. Yes, this is my life. Like, acting is the thing that I want to do, but having the power to walk away and feel like that you're in control of your life, as opposed to, oh my God, I'm hunting, I'm chasing, I've got to get the next thing. If I don't get it, I'm just going to die.
Yeah, I think that if you don't have that, then why are you doing what you're doing? If you're not living, this is a philosophy I've started to develop more and more. I always had the inkling of it, but as I get a little older, I realize that it's the kernel of truth. If you're not living, you're going to have a really hard time acting, honestly. You know, if you're not living a life, how do you have what it takes? How do you have those experiences? How do you have that well of emotion and depth to pull from? And you got to go out and you got to live. And the desperation, you have to leave that outside of that audition room. Desperation will not get you the job. Desperation will get you to the audition room. You will scramble like crazy to get there. But you got to take a breath and leave all of that outside when you go in. Because you walk in with all that need and all that want and all that desperation, you're just imposing your own need for something on somebody else. And that's not what they're there for. They're there to do their job. They're there to find the best person for the part. They hope that it's you every time you walk in. No one in that casting room is going, gosh, I really hope that this guy sucks. I really hope that this is the one that makes me groan and wish that I had chosen a different profession.
I really hope this is the guy who's going to keep me in the room all damn day.
Right. No, they don't want to go through it. We don't want to go through it. Everyone wants the experience in that room to be an excellent one, a pleasant one, one that everyone walks away from smiling and feeling good about.
Right. Right. So, speaking of getting in the room and auditioning, Have you lived through a pilot season in LA yet?
I moved here September of 2013. And so in a sense, yes. But I had very little awareness of what was going on at the time. I would see the auditions. I would see stuff. But at that time, I was not represented. I was auditioning for the term is escaping me right now.
Spec, is that the term?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, a lot of spec commercials, spec pilots, things like that. Mm-hmm. I was auditioning for those and not really for anything that's already established, nothing for studios. So I think of it in that analogy of the fish in the pond. Mm-hmm. Am I a little fish in a big pond? Am I a big fish in a little pond?
Right.
I was definitely like microscopic. I was bacteria on the fish's fin. I'm just sort of observing all these big bodies moving back and forth. And I feel like I've had a little bit more experience. I don't feel like bacteria this year. I feel like I've had a little insight into the goings-ons and into the minds of people who have been doing this for years, for decades. That's been the biggest help for me, is getting to talk to people who were doing this job in this town 30, 40 years ago, and pick their brains and see what they say.
You know, we get some pilot stuff here in Atlanta, and it's I guess there's stuff that, you know, it's filming around. I've got to audition for a few of them. There's not the fervor yet that I think of when I think of LA pilot season. And again, I've never lived there, but it always sounds to me like people gearing up for, you know, baseball season or football season, or here comes pilot season. I got to get all my together and, you know, get ready to audition and go, and it's just going to be crazy town, I hope. Here, it's like, you know, we get pilots and stuff, and I'm sure that if you're at a certain level, there is a greater sense of pilot season, I suppose. But I wonder if that's not mostly still in a lot of our LA transplants. I don't know. And I say that having had a chance to audition for a few, but I haven't felt, but they've kind of come through the whole year. And I don't know if that's because of the internet or what.
Well, it's also because LA is still TV town. Atlanta and some other markets are taking a lot of the movie business, and that's sort of going further away on location, places where the tax incentives allow productions to spend less money and therefore make more money. In LA, in Hollywood, it's still TV town. There's still studios with lots. There's still television shows being made here. So you've got that factor, and also there are just more actors, more producers, more studios, more writers, more scripts, more ideas, all of it. There's just more of it here. So yes, there's a bit of a fervor, I think, but it's just a part of that is the volume. There's just more of that here, where that's not established yet in the Atlanta market.
You know, I've been hearing people talk about Atlanta for a long time as a place where, you know, all the film's going to happen and it's all going to come over here and it's all going to be, you know, amazing. And I was hearing this back in, like, the 90s. And I remember thinking, well, you know, I don't know. Now there's enough legitimate work here that it's a good town. But when I pull back and I look at it not as an actor who would like to work here, but as a business guy, I sort of think of it as a supply line. The business will flourish here if the barriers to production are lower. And tax incentives, yes. But I mean, they're building studios here. That's good. It's going to take them about a decade to recoup that investment. So, of course, they're going to come down here. That's great. You know, there's a pretty good talent base here. So as long as it continues to get better, and I imagine we'll still get more LA transplants, but as the talent base continues to grow and get better, that's another link in the supply chain. as we get more professionals in the technical aspects, that base here and all the side businesses that go around that, that's more stuff in the supply chain. And I think we're not there yet, but I do see hope that, that it's on the way to being a very, very, very strong market.
And let's talk about what not there yet actually means, because I can feel people in Atlanta right now, if they're listening to this podcast, getting defensive. I can feel it. I can feel it happening. And
calm down, Atlanta.
And the thing is, it's not a level. It's not really about the expertise. It's not really about when we say not there yet. It's not about the talent. Just like in your own personal, as an actor, my own personal experiences, it's not really always about my talent. It's about my experience. Do I have a fan base? Do I look the part? Do they want to work with me? In Atlanta, the is it there yet is about the volume, the supply, and what is needed for a production. Because Atlanta isn't necessarily, it may be generating some movies and generating some TV shows from the inception through to the end product. But that's happening, I think, just from my experience when I was there. It's been a year and a half, almost 2 years. That was happening on a very small studio level. Good work being done, but little like boutique production companies, not grand studios, because that just isn't there. You've got what? Screen Gems is there? I think.
We've got Screen Gems in Wilmington. Tyler Perry has built a bunch of stuff, but there's some other ones. And I should get a list and do my homework on this. But I was speaking with someone, I can't say who, but I was speaking with someone who, let's be honest, we were drinking, who was telling me that I raised the same kind of concern that I raised earlier about, you know, is Atlanta really going to take off? Is it, you know, whatever. Someone who very much has a reason to be in the know about this kind of stuff was like, dude, you really don't get it. Like, you don't understand how much money is coming in right now, how much stuff is coming here. And he says, I understand what it looks like right now, but you don't understand what is about to happen here. And one of the things this person cited was the level of studio investment and studio construction that's coming. And just to get their money back, you know, how long they'll need to turn around those buildings and stuff like that. So I'm interested to see what shakes out of it, because I think we're at a coming period of growth. What interests me about what you were just saying, there was something missing. You're talking about it's not always about the talent. I agree. But it's not always about who has the production resources to do it either. The missing thing, I think, is the I know a guy factor, the community,
yeah.
Right? People who've worked together forever. Right now in LA, you've got people who have worked together 30, 40 years and on show after show after show, right? Here, that is still building. You know, you've got it in the theater community where, oh, I've worked with so-and-so and so-and-so forever. But we've got, you know, so many productions that are coming from Nashville, that are coming from North Carolina, that are coming from kind of all over, that we are building the, oh, you got to work with so-and-so because he does this, or, oh, you need a 50-foot plastic Ken doll. Oh, I know a guy. They're just right down there. You know, in L.A., you expect, oh, I know a guy. He's right there. I can get you this right now. You know, in Atlanta, we're going to get that, but it takes time. And having worked on enough commercials, I get a lot of commercial work, I'm starting to see the same faces over and over, that in small pools of production companies, the I know a guy factor is starting to kick in.
Yes, and I think it's actually been there for a few years. I will not be surprised when some of the people that I worked with there before I left are in key positions in the next 20 years. To 20 years from now, some of the people that said, Atlanta's my home, this is where I'm going to be doing my work, they'll be in key production positions. Studio positions, and that's fantastic. I knew that when I left, and you know, there's a few companies there that I think of right now that they're gonna be sitting back going, "We told you so." 20 years from now, when they're major studios, I'm going to say this because I think they do great work and I think that they deserve it. Whitestone Motion Pictures. If you haven't looked them up, look them up. They are fantastic people to work with and they do good work. And they, from the inception, from the idea through to the end product, they create it. And they've been approached by people out here to move their situation and decided not to. So that's how you know, like these. That's how you know that Atlanta is a market that's sustaining, that will continue to thrive, and it's going to grow. Now, that being said, I feel like I just like did a little pep talk for Atlanta. That being said, I left it. I left Atlanta, and I did it knowing that, and knowing that I was going to be missing out on the ground floor work that's going on with those smaller studios and with those people, with you, with Polar Studios. You know, we have to work across the country now, which impedes our progress a little bit. But I moved out here because I knew that I needed to be out here looking for parts that suit my particular brand. The product that I'm selling, which is me. And I hope that it takes me back to Georgia because, you know, I'd love to come home and do a project. But I also want to go to, you know, overseas. I want to travel the world doing what I do. And I think that's sort of the crux of what I think of when I think of a bi-coastal actor. I actually am thinking of, you know, both coasts of the U.S., but I'm thinking multi-coastal actor would be nice, you know, in a world where that's more possible than it ever has been.
Yeah, so you're coming back to Georgia the long way around.
Yeah.
I want to travel very much, and I obviously want to be successful in this, and I've always felt like that to be successful in this, me personally, I'm going to have to go a slightly non-conventional route because I thought of going to L.A. for a long time, and, you know, I think it is still in my future to be there. I don't know yet if it is in my future to live there, but I feel like whereas your path to Atlanta will be the long way around through LA, I feel like my path to any time in LA will be a bunch of weird back roads, you know, via Atlanta and other places. And so far, so good. Like I'm booking, I'm working, and my type is doing well here, and we'll see what that means later. But we should probably start wrapping it up and bringing it on in. I think we should continue this discussion.
Yeah, pilot season here in LA is going to be going on for like a month or more.
Right.
January, February. So there's going to be a lot of stuff coming down the pipeline that I'm going to become aware of as it's happening. And I want to keep that discussion going.
Yeah.
So I think what you and I, when we first started talking about this specific episode and this podcast, you said pilots would be a good thing to talk about for the first episode. And I said, oh, okay, well, you know, I'm going to have to do some research, find out what pilot seasons, which is me, Mr. I could never be prepared. I could never be prepared for anything.
Mr. Calm, cool, and collected.
Yeah. I am definitely not sweating through my shirt right now doing a podcast. I started to have my little wig out and you said, well, yeah, pilot season. Of course, we need to talk about that. We're actors and you're in LA. But let's talk about beginning things, pilots of things in our lives, you know, not just pilot season TV shows, but starting something. And I think what I've discovered as an actor, as an artist, as a human being, is that starting requires that willingness to jump blindly or with one eye halfway open and just, you know, take that risk. The thing that's a little more, I'd say a little more work, requires endurance is then following it through, doing the day-to-day, like the daily and weekly and monthly check-ins to say, here's my goal. What have I done to achieve that goal today? Just today. Even if it's just, I updated my resume. Even if it's just, I researched a guy to do my website. Even if it's just, I made the decision to have somebody else do my website instead of saying, I'm going to do it over and over and over again and never getting it done. Those are the steps that we have to take, the little maintenance things that we have to do to take that pilot, that little beginning, and turn it into a full season.
Whoa, Benjamin. Don't give it all away now. We have to save. Mm-hmm. We have to save some of this, you know. You can't just give the whole thing away, Ben. All right?
Why are you Shatnering me right now?
You know what we're going to do?
What are we going to do?
We're just going to let this sit.
Is it going to simmer?
We're just going to let this sit.
Hmm.
And we're going to meditate on it. If you are disappointed that we did not talk enough about pilot season, don't worry. We'll talk more about it later. But for now...
Oh my God, you're actually cliffhangering our first episode. I love it.
That's right. Mm. For now, hang on to that cliff because we got to go. I'm Jeff Holbrook.
I'm Ben Austin.
And this is The Bicoastal Actor. If you like this show, please rate it on iTunes. That will help us get listens. And if you don't like the show, well, then you should go to polarpodcast.com and find something that you do like. Until then, we should sign off, Ben. How are we signing off?
I'm going to say, what time is it there? It's 8 o'clock?
7:56.
7:56. I'm going to say, have a good evening. You're going to say, have a good dinner.
Okay.
Or should it be something along the lines of...
Ben?
Jeff?
Have a good evening.
Have a good evening, Jeff.
Oh, shit, I messed it up.
Yeah, you were supposed to say dinner.
Whatever, I'm actually going to go eat dinner now.
Yeah.
So.
And I'm actually going to go buy groceries at the farmer's market.
Okay. All right, I have been and always shall be your friend.
I wish I could touch the...